11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running, liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour, liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hey folks, it is Monday, September 7th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 25 of Beyond the Handle. My name is Alan, also known as Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. In what might be our final episode, my friend Poops McKenzie actually interviewed me. So we spoke for quite a bit of time. I figured because it's episode 25 and because I have recently made the move from Winnipeg to Toronto and I'm not sure exactly what the future is for Beyond the Handle that we would do the interview with me. So, yeah, let's just feed my ego, shall we? Anyways, we talk about a whole bunch of shit, including the origins of the Slip name and other stuff. Honestly, we spoke like 3 weeks ago, so I can't remember. I've been busy moving. Let's just get into it. This is Poops McKenzie's interview with me, your boy Slip. Slip here on Beyond the Handle.
All right, welcome everybody to episode 25 of Beyond the Handle. I'm your special guest host, Poops McKenzie. I'm here with my man, Kid Tetris. Help me out in the booth.
Guten Abend.
And we have a very special guest today. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Slip.
Slip.
What's going on, brother?
What's going on, pal?
Well, we're commemorating 25 episodes.
We are.
With a very special one-on-one, well, two-on-one interview.
The way I like it.
with the man who got this all started.
Hey, that's me.
Mr. Slip. Now, we got a lot of topics to cover tonight. It's a late night here at Kid Tetris's pad. He's let us squat here for a little bit.
He's told the ladies they have to come a little later tonight.
The usual the usual recording studio is no more. Which, as anybody who is following the day-to-day machinations of Slip on Twitter, he is leaving us for Toronto.
See ya.
So he's been spending, I was thinking you are actually now living the life that some have accused you of living. You are living right now with your mom.
I am.
And doing all of your trolling on the internet from basically your mom's house. So,
oh, well, I have conversations with my mom about how my day went. While teasing people on Twitter at the same time.
Yeah.
Hey, it's good.
She's cooking you meals and you're doing all that. So it's come full circle for you. And we will touch on a variety of topics, including the upcoming move. But first, we're going to do the question that you ask everybody.
Uh-oh.
Right out of the gate. And this one is a fun one. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who want to know exactly what your handle means. Now, we know what your handle means, but I want you to explain it to all your listeners. So why don't you take it away?
I don't even know how it originated, to be honest with you. I mean, I obviously know what it means.
Yes.
But I don't remember, like, the first time it was ever used. It was sometime when we were in... Uh-oh.
I think I recall one of the times it was used on the MSN chat rooms. Does that ring a bell?
No, but...
Probably.
I'm sure it's probably first year university, is my guess.
Probably, yeah.
That's my guess. That's a lot of this stuff.
The term, it's a term that we used, the term Slip is something that we used for many years as just a kind of a term, something that we would say in certain situations, which you'll explain more of. So but you started using it as your, not just your Twitter handle, but other handles throughout the internet.
So the classic meaning of Slip is... basically, to do something in a sly fashion. Now, yes. The original context of it was dirty.
Yes, it was.
For lack of a better term, it was to get some slip action.
Yes.
Hey.
Well, anywhere, it could be over a shoulder.
But we ended up putting it in a lot of different contexts. Slip just basically turned into like anything underhanded that you do. So if you're sitting there with like, you know, pizza and I decide that I'm going to take the pizza from you, slip,
yeah.
take it away from you.
Yes.
The best slip ever, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't remember if you were there, Poops.
Yeah.
I know that, that our pal Mistopheles was.
Yeah.
We went to the cheap theater to see Deep Impact. And, it was like a packed theater. And there's a scene where they're watching the news and they're like talking about this meteor that's going to come destroy Earth. And there's these two like teenagers watching it. And the one guy puts his arm around the girl. And at that moment, me and Mistoff were both like, slip!
So good.
Cracked up the theater. So we were pretty proud.
Good work.
But yeah, but then that's like innocent slip.
Yes.
Then we came up with lecherous slip.
Yes.
So you can say it like slip the fun way. It's like slip.
It's like I'm going to slip on by.
Yeah, yeah. But then there's like the you know, the kind of the naughty slip where it's like slip.
So and now you have been, as you've been hosting, you've been kind of letting the eyes go a little longer every time. You've been dropping that in here and there, getting a little more lecherous as you get along.
Well, we've had lots of slip. Like we've said it so much.
Yeah.
Over the years. And I made it. I turned in my Twitter handle. I guess my online persona, what did I start with? I started with Scout.
Yes, way back in the day.
Way back in the day, because when we were in high school, that was my nickname. And then, I don't remember what it morphed into.
Well, it started out as Scalin.
Yeah.
Like in Triangle Scalin.
Yeah.
And then we just called you Scal.
But when Slip came about, it was because I eventually started using it as my password. And that's the reason why it has five eyes, because that gives you eight characters, and that's what you need for a password.
What a great password. Yeah.
So it's not a password anymore, but then I just made it my Twitter handle, because I was like, who's going to use Slip? And people who know me will see Slip and know right away.
Yes.
And you know what? I get a little pride when I like run into people that I haven't seen for years, and they're like, you know, Slip, and
yeah.
They know what it is, right?
Because yep.
There was quite a few of us who use it. So yeah, that's Slip.
That's the story behind the handle. It's one of the better stories, really.
That's a great story.
Hey. Thanks, Kid Tetris.
What's the story behind the Kid Tetris handle?
Well, Kid Tetris was a Tetris champion.
Yeah, not with ET.
I think I coined you Kid Tetris, so I take full credit for calling you Kid Tetris.
Well, the game Tetris originates in southern Russia. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah.
That's a little known fact. What it was, they used to take all the town mules and they would color them different colors and they'd race them into barns. And the first ones in was called Tetris. The game Tetris was born.
Ooh.
That's
very nice.
Tetris.
So not only is Kid Tetris awesome at Tetris,
and handsome.
Yeah.
And handsome.
Oh,
he knows
you.
The
thank
origins of the game, yeah. That it, which he's named after.
I've actually played it once, and I was in southern Russia. I was
very
there
good.
For the annual Tetris festival.
Perfect.
Yeah. The coloring of the mules. That's the day
we
before.
We did cover a little bit more of the Kid Tetris lore when I was a guest on this show. I doubt many people listened. I know we got some bad feedback on that one.
We did. We'll probably get bad feedback on this one too. It's
yeah.
All
good.
You just tried to interview your buddies. Yeah,
that's kind of the point. I further to that, you have been doing a lot of you've got some notoriety going on. Here in Winnipeg, prior to you leaving for Toronto, and we'll get to that. But for now, we'll talk about some of the things that you've been doing lately, and what are the plans in the future. So beyond the handle, of course, is this it?
I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do with this show. I did some Skype interviews, so I could still do it, but it's kind of supposed to be a Winnipeg-centric thing, and I'm not going to be here, so... I don't know. I honestly don't know. I might do, you know, I was like, oh, I could do BTH 416.
Yeah.
But then I have to get to know people in Toronto.
And yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm not really looking forward to that.
No.
But, so I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll do something though. There's going to be something. The one that like, for the lack of a better term, is going to get this whole thing over is the one that I started with the Arctic Ice Hockey, because that one's got an audience that's already
yes.
floating around. So I could have just spun off from that and kind of promoted Beyond the Handle and Mezzanine Sleepover.
Yes.
But and then the move got in the way, so we'll see what happens.
So we do the mezzanine sleepover, and we've done about seven episodes so far. And we're going to give it a go, aren't we? Is that the plan?
So. If you can sneak out to your car to do Skype calls so you don't wake your kid up.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Yeah. So fret not to all the people out there who listen to Mezzanine Sleepover religiously.
Like the four of you. Yeah. Two of whom are you and me.
And I'm sure Kid Tetris hasn't heard a second of the Mezzanine Sleepover. So that would explain we do not have a very big fan base.
No.
Well, no. I hope to participate.
Oh, yes. Well, absolutely.
Beyond the handle, so the reason that I decided to do it was, for years I talked about podcasts, as you know.
Yes.
And then I got a radio gig at CKUW. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a parting gift from someone who left. And there was going to be some... basically, in doing the show, I was like, this feels like it's got like a limited shelf life.
Yeah.
Because that host would probably come back at some point, and I don't know how co-hosting would have worked. So I was like, damn it. Like, I need to figure something out at that point. Yep. So I was just like, okay, well, what can I do? And I figured, well... You know, no one, you know, who the hell wants to listen to me talk about, like, oh, it's the slip fantasy football hour. It's the slip wrestling show. Like, who the fuck am I, right? So I was like, okay, well, people will listen to about other people that they, like, follow on Twitter.
Yep.
And then if I do that, the people that come on from Twitter will promote the show as much as I do.
Yep.
So you get double the promotion. And that was the whole idea behind it.
Yeah, so you did 24 episodes previous to this one.
Yep.
And what are some of the moments...
Well, the poops ones were my favorites.
I mean, the
getting us around the table. I mean, that was kind of like the one I was looking forward to the most and enjoyed doing the most.
That was awesome.
It was. People seemed to get a kick out of, like, Melissa Martin, which was an early one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And talking about her bar.
Yeah. No, that was the one I enjoyed the most.
And
listening to.
You know, some of the guys that we'd been interacting with a lot that I didn't really, like, get to know personally until I met them, like Tej.
Yep.
Little TJ Mon and RB and, you know, all of those dudes from, like, the Arctic ice hockey community were good. But it was good to talk to. I got hooked up with a guy through someone I work with named Steve Onatera, a samurai guitarist.
Yep.
Which, if you haven't seen his videos, are, like,
yep,
awesome on great. YouTube. His latest one that he put out was, like, playing Super Mario 3, and then on the other side, it's him playing, like, the music for Super Mario 3, including all the coins and, like,
perfect,
all the noises. So, nice. Anyway, I don't know. It was kind of neat to meet everybody, to be honest with you. Even, you know, like, on topics that I wouldn't normally talk about.
Yeah. Well, you got to be quite the interviewer.
I guess so.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
So you then kind of parlayed that into being at the ground level of the Arctic Ice Hockey's Super Fans show.
Well, the guy that hosted the podcast before we did ours, which was called Jetstream.
Because they've had three other ones, right?
They had one called Afterburners.
Yep.
I didn't know it that well. And then Jetstream started.
Okay, so two other ones.
And I don't know if there was another one. But Jetstream had gone on for probably a year and a half. And then that met kind of a sudden end because of, I think, the professional aspirations of one of the hosts. And
yep.
So there was a void for them to fill in a show, and there was a couple of guys, Pappy and Sad Sack, who had their own kind of webcast show.
Yeah.
And they were doing a good job with it, but it wasn't being podcast. It was just like a live show every week for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no content after they did it. Yep. So it was like, well, I told them for a long time, you need to record this or podcast it or do something. So they spun it into AIH Superfans, which is a term... The super yes. fan, which I have to, you know, TM, Poops McKenzie.
Well, I mean, I didn't make it up, but I take credit for using it more than anybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm trying to find a new one.
So I told them that I'd get started with them, but pretty much right when we started it, this whole Toronto business came up. So I told them, like, there's a good chance I've got, like, a month to do this with you, and then you're going to have to figure out what the hell to do. And that's what they're doing now.
All right, so let's talk about the Toronto business very quickly. You are leaving this coming week. 1 week from now, right?
Next Friday. I'll be on
the road. You're driving out there.
Yeah.
You've got your place lined up.
Yep.
Perfect.
It's all done.
You're going right into work the next Monday. Nice.
Not taking a break this time around.
Nope.
Just My job has had like a number of sudden pieces of movement involved with it over the years. I'm sure we can talk about a few other places that I've been to, but it was like, you know, what are we now? August 14th?
Yep.
The conversation about this came up probably right after Canada Day, where it was like, oh, this might happen. And yeah. So from that point to this point, I applied, interviewed, got the job, and have moved everything out and yeah. the condo on sale, and away I go.
So what are you, so you, I mean, we won't get into too much, but you have, what's this?
Shit.
Shit. Kid Tetris is fucking with me. What are you looking forward to out in Toronto?
I don't even know.
There's got to be a lot of things.
Not Leafs. I'll tell you that.
Come on.
I just can't. I can't do it.
So much Leafs.
I know. And you know what? Actually, one of the things that when I lived in Ottawa, especially, I kind of like, I used to actually have like a couple of times I actually dreamed about going to Jets games. Like the Jets had come back.
Yep.
And I went to the games, but not in Winnipeg. I went to see them in Ottawa. And,
okay.
And like harped at the fans there.
Yeah.
And so I was excited when the Jets came back here. But I was back in Winnipeg when it happened.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? It would be fun to like live somewhere else, but be a fan, like a legitimate fan of the team that's not from that city.
Yes.
And when I lived in Edmonton, I became an Oilers fan. When I was in Ottawa, I became a Sens fan.
Yeah.
So I was always kind of the homer guy. And now
you
at this point, I'll be cheering for the enemy. So that's going to be fun. My boss is a Leafs fan. So
great.
We'll see how that goes. And otherwise, like people tend to love Montreal,
yep.
and you get mixed feelings about Toronto.
Yep.
And I'm the opposite.
You like Toronto. Well, you're a Toronto guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, Montreal, it's all right. Like, I can see why people like living there, but... Eh.
So, I guess you're a traveling kind of guy.
I have been. I don't know if I will be for... I don't know if I'll do a lot of it after this move for a while. Because Toronto's got everything I want.
It's got everything you want.
Yeah.
But, you know, for NFL, you're going to be nice and close to a lot of markets.
Well, I'm going to go to Cleveland
yeah.
at the end of September. I got to cross that off the list. That'll be number 26.
Yeah.
And
what do you got left?
So I've been to 25 of them, 25 stadiums yeah. for games. Like yeah. I've seen more, but I've seen more
being
stadiums,
in the audience, actually being in the crowd. The
game, I've been to 25.
Okay.
So I have the Browns, the Giants. I've been to a Jets game though.
Okay.
Which is in the same stadium, but I consider the Giants to be a different.
Well, you know, they change the colors in the yeah, stadium, so there you go. It's different.
The Packers, and I had a failed experience of going to Green Bay last year, so I have to do the Packers,
yep.
the Cardinals, and then the three Florida teams, Jacksonville,
oh,
Miami,
God.
Tampa.
Yeah.
And I was actually originally planning on doing that this year, but then again, the Toronto thing then popped up, so that won't be happening. And then when those are done, then I have to loop back to places that have new stadiums.
Well, of course.
So I got to go to San Francisco. I'm going to have to go to Minneapolis again for a Vikings game.
Yeah.
And then inevitably in the next 2 years, there's going to be a team or two that are going to move to yep. LA. So I'm going to have to do that too. So that'll be...
That'll be... So you got the sports. You have a lot of options.
And then the hockey.
The hockey.
I mean, I've been to most... I haven't been to Columbus and Pittsburgh. I've been to those cities and seen their arenas, but I haven't been to a game.
Okay.
And those are both about 7 hours away. So the Jets play both of them on Saturdays this season.
So you can...
So I'll make those trips.
Zip out.
As a non-fan, you know, weird how I've seen the Jets play in 4 out-of-town markets so far.
Yep.
And after this year is done, I'll probably have that up to 9.
Yeah.
I've gone to Jets games in 9 other cities.
Yeah.
On top of the ones here. But I'm not a fan, right? Because...
Well, let's talk about that. I was gonna go off and get you talking a little bit more about, you know, some other stuff about Toronto, but fuck that. Let's go right into that. You are considered not a fan by many people on Twitter. You're one of the more outspoken members of the Winnipeg Jets Twitter sphere. And what is it that you do that get people so upset? I mean, I know, but let's tell your listeners.
You talked a lot about this when I asked you the question
yep.
on your interview. To me, I just, you know, I don't think that I'm negative. I think, honestly, that, like, as much as people might be like, oh, I hate seeing all the negativity on there, I'm just usually stating a fact or asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, like, there's nothing wrong with someone being positive either.
Nope.
But being blindly positive all the time, it's like, I, you know, that gets to me just as much as someone probably doesn't like me pointing out other things about the team.
Yes.
You know, for example, we don't have a rich championship winning history in the city.
Nope.
We just don't. You know, we have a football team that hasn't won in 25 years in an 18 league.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a hockey team that's never won a Stanley Cup. They had success in the WHA. That was before I was born. And then they'll be like, well, you know, we hung banners from the 1901 Stanley Cup champion Winnipeg Victorias in our arena. Because that's the best that's happened here, right?
Yeah, back when you could challenge for the cup and play one game and win it.
And honestly, like, there's nothing, you know, I think that people associate bad, you know, we have bad sports with we have a bad city.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
And that doesn't make any sense. We have two very different things here.
Yeah.
Winnipeg's a great city. The sports are fun. We have good fans.
Yep.
But it hasn't been very good.
Yeah, there's been a real feeling of and what I've talked about before, too, is that, and I don't know if you agree, is that the problem with the fandom is that people internalize it so much like they're trying to prove something.
Yeah. Like, and I get it. Like, we have chips on our shoulders because hockey left this city. Though, again, you know, I stated before, until the last 2 years before the Jets left back in the day, no one cared. Like,
no.
People cared, but it wasn't sweeping across this city.
No.
You know, they had a fan base, and the arena wasn't full, and they left, and people, you know, at that point had some regret, and then people that didn't have, you know, they weren't the buyers of the tickets.
Nope.
That generation grew up and then grew antsy for a team, and now it's those people that are supporting the team.
Yeah.
That are really into it, and you know what? Like, it's worked out so far, and hopefully it keeps working out. But, you know, we're not automatically, like, the best at everything.
Nope.
There are 30 teams in the league. There are 30 fan bases in the league. You know, do we have a better fan base here, like a larger fan base than Florida, than Phoenix, than, I don't know, Columbus, Carolina? Sure. Like, yes, we do. But are we necessarily bigger, better, louder than Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, Montreal?
Nope.
Chicago, you know, like, no. Like, those are, you know, like, those are just as good. And that's not a bad thing. Yet we tout ourselves, which is good. Like, we really prop ourselves up. But then we're also very quick to shit on other markets.
Yeah.
Like, we really like to point out other markets and kind of make fun of them, which is fine. There's an element of sport that involves that. And then somebody, like today, someone writes this article. You know,
you better watch out. I'm going to start ranting on your podcast. No, you go ahead.
Someone writes an article in Washington, like, you know, for, I don't even know what the publication was. It's not even a big one. It's like,
was it a blog?
It's like a blog, basically. And they're like, you know, here's our preview of the Jets. They didn't do anything this summer. You know, they let, you know, one of the top free agents on the market walk away. They re-signed one of their RFAs that had been over in Russia. That's it. That's what this team has done so far in the summer. So why can we expect that this team that squeaked into the playoffs are going to be any better this year? Like, what is it?
Yeah.
You know, these players, you know, Scheifele, Trouba, and Lowry are all young, so they could still take a step forward, right?
Yep.
But the core of this team is what they are. These are all, like, mid to late 20-year-old players.
Yeah.
They don't all of a sudden turn into even, like, better than what they are.
Yeah, right? And they may probably, the chances are they're going to get worse.
And a lot of them are great. Like, yeah. They're good players, but they're not going to turn around next year and be absolute superstars in the league.
Yeah.
So what's there to expect? That was the question. Why should we expect this team takes a step forward next year?
Yeah, that blog was, by the way, the main part of that blog where there was anything that people were upset about was three paragraphs long.
Yeah.
In some other city's thing, and you can go on SB Nation, and you can read previews by blogs of other teams, and people are always writing it, and it wasn't a big deal. But again, people went off. And I was listening to it on the radio this morning, today, during the day, and it was like, that was a topic of discussion. It was that somebody wrote that, and people were upset.
Like, a guy wrote something, and how dare he not be like, Winnipeg is the best at everything in hockey. It's just, it's asking a realistic question.
Yep.
And this city can't take it. Yep. Like, we cannot take anything other than just like, if people don't write just like glowing praise about everything that this team has done, then it's bullshit, right?
Yeah.
But then when there's a publication like the Hockey News that says this team's going to win the Stanley Cup in 2019, well, that's true.
No, that's going to happen.
Yeah. So,
you have you've been outspoken. I wouldn't say overly negative. I think that there's some, you know, I think, you know, we like to think that we're fairly realistic in what we talk about, but there's a little bit of, you know, knife turning a little bit here and there.
I like to be that, like, one of those guys. I was talking about it when I interviewed Arby. And one of the reasons that Arby and I get along is because, and one of the reasons you and I get along is because we typically are those guys that are like the, yeah, but. You know, there's always a narrative that's put out there that's like, you know, the primary narrative in any situation.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily like to just accept, like, the primary narrative.
Yeah.
So, for example, and this, you know, you actually asked a good question yesterday on Twitter, which is, at some point in time, how long will it be before True North Sports and Entertainment says, you know what, this arena is too small?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't meet what, you know, it may meet the NHL standard kind of barely. Like, it was built just to meet the minimum.
Yeah.
And in 2004, when it was open. And now in 2015, it's still at that point, right?
Yeah.
But what will it be in 2020 or in 2025?
Well, yeah, it's true.
So is it going to come up that this is going to be a stadium or an arena that is good enough for professional hockey in the city? And then what happens at that point?
Yeah.
And I just think, you know what? Like, it's a valid question to ask.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean you hate the city or anything. It's why not ask the question? Another one, and again, like, you know, there's always this talk about this hive mentality, especially with people associated with Arctic ice hockey, where it's like, oh, they all think the same, right? And this isn't a Winnipeg Jets thing, but for example, a couple of my co-hosts they're not my co-hosts. I kind of produce the show, but a couple of the hosts on the Winnipeg Jets Superfans podcast, they really like to promote the beer snake at Farmer Games.
Uh-huh. The beer snake.
My opinion is that it's just playing with garbage.
I agree 100%.
That's all it is people fought really hard. We built a brand new stadium for this football team, and people went to the games and immediately wanted, it wasn't good enough. They were like, what we must do is play with our garbage. And so they made these beer snakes, and it's used cups. You're spilling booze on people. And then in the first time they use it, they threw all the cups on the field, which is why it got banned.
Yep.
And then how dare they? And then there's a campaign, and then celebration when they're like, well, now we have a section that's beer snake. You're just playing with your garbage, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So I just asked that question, like, that's all it is. And I have to go to Toronto, and I'll have to explain, like, well, they like to do this thing with
stack the cups. They play a game.
And someone will probably ask, like, isn't that disgusting?
I think that you're going to get a lot of questions.
You know?
Especially from, like, your new coworkers. They're probably going to ask you a lot of things. And so get ready for that. So, yes, you are a bit of the, you play the, you play a little bit of the heel on Twitter. But, you know, it's,
Welcome back, Kid Tetris.
Kid Tetris has returned. Back.
Thank you.
He went and changed. Or were you wearing that?
No, he was wearing that before. Oh, he's looking as good as ever. Okay.
Dapper.
We can circle back to Twitter, of course, anytime you want, because that is kind of the main place where we kind of converse about a lot of things. But let's talk about, we were talking about Toronto, we were talking about you moving away, but this is not, and you kind of mentioned a little bit about this, but you have not lived in Winnipeg your whole life. You have actually lived in two other cities in your adult life.
I have.
And I know that you got some stories about the first place that you moved to.
I spent three wonderful years in Ottawa, from 2003 to 2006.
Yep.
And I spent another year in Edmonton.
Yeah,
in but previous to that. Yeah. Previous to that, in 2001. And that year could be described as a lot of things.
Well, let's hear about it.
It was not good.
And you were not. And you were a vocal. You were vocally not an Edmonton fan of the city.
When I went out to Edmonton, I had been to Edmonton like three times before that.
Yeah.
And had no real opinion. I was, in fact, you know, when I first heard about the opportunity to go, I was like, this is really cool. I've always kind of wanted to work in another city, see what it's like.
Yeah.
Edmonton's about the same size as Winnipeg. They have a hockey team. We didn't have an NHL team at the time. So I was like, okay, like, let's go do it, right? And it was supposed to be a two-month thing, and then it turned into a year.
Yeah.
But by the end of my first month, I remember someone writing me and being like, hey, I need to send you something from Winnipeg. And what's the address? So I wrote them back, and I was like, well, here, and I wrote the address out. And then I was like, but I'm sure that if you write hell in big red letters on the front of the envelope, it'll get to me.
Good old Edmonton.
And so it took about a month for me to be at that point with Edmonton. It
didn't take long.
I had a number of epiphanies when I was in Edmonton about Edmonton. One of the best was when, again, you were coming to visit. So I'd been in Edmonton for like 4 months at the time.
Yes, I guess. You were early 2001, moved.
So you came out.
I came down in May.
Yeah, you came out in like May.
Yeah.
So I was asked, like, oh, well, when Poops, because that's what everyone calls you, right?
No, yeah, right.
They're like, when he gets here, what are you going to do? Like, where are you going to take him? And I was like, well, I'll take him to West Edmonton Mall. And then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, like, that's the only thing I could think about taking him to. And I knew that that was a place to go before I lived here.
Yeah.
So I lived here for 4 months, and it's,
and
like,
by the way, a place I had been multiple times. Yeah. I know West Edmonton Mall.
Did you own the submarine?
Or go see the slaves performing?
That was, yes, there was a dolphin show at the time in West Edmonton Mall. And so we'd go to the dolphin show, and I'd loudly proclaim, like, let's clap for the slaves that are performing tricks. Because dolphins are smart. They know they're fucked.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Do they still have it?
No.
I heard that he saw this documentary, but apparently Flipper committed suicide.
Really?
That's the rumor has it, yeah.
You saw that they talked about, there's a documentary about dolphins or about
Flipper? Yeah, no, the trainer of Flipper did a documentary, and he proclaims that Flipper actually killed herself.
I could see that.
Yeah. Just given the intelligence of the animal.
And people wouldn't like it, right? Like,
no.
I mean, why would they? But I'm standing there proclaiming, like, this is a slave show, and everyone's excited.
People were not happy. I remember being there with you when we were saying it and getting, like, the dirtiest looks.
And someone at one point was like, you know, like, they should be pretty happy. That's a pretty big tank that they're in. And I was like, yeah, it looks about as big as the ocean. Yeah.
You know? Maybe you should put them in the tank.
Exactly.
See if they do it.
And so there was that.
Yeah.
There was the infamous experience at the Edmonton Eskimos game. Well, where?
Tell us about it.
So, this with the peanuts?
Yeah. Tell us the story, please.
So I went to, again, the non-Winnipeg fan that I am.
Yeah.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers come town. And this is 2001. This team is a shit, right? Like, this
they
is
were awesome.
Yeah, this is Kahari Jones and...
Milt Stegall
and what's his name? The running back.
Charles Roberts.
Yeah, so like... You know, this is a dynamite team.
Yep.
That did little touchdown dances after.
I remember that.
Which is
they had swagger before Swaggerville existed.
That's right, they did. So they come to town, and like I have this game circled on the calendar. I'm just like, this is my opportunity to let out like my Edmonton frustration.
Yes.
On all the people.
Well, we are notorious like non fans of the Edmonton Eskimos.
Yes.
I hate the Edmonton Eskimos with a passion. I mean, starting with their name, and then all the way down to the fact that they're from Edmonton. But yeah.
So continue. I went to this game. And was like immediately a prick, like just loudly cheering for the Bombers, making fun of Edmonton,
posing probably. Posing.
Yeah, you know, whatever. And the Bombers won the game, which was good too. But I had this, they had this like, the people all around my section were like chirping at me, obviously. And I had this dad sitting behind me, and he had like a 5-year-old with him. So at one point, his kid hurls an insult to me. He's like, oh, you know, you suck or something. And the dad looks at me and he's like, it's pretty funny when a 5-year-old makes fun of you. And I was like, it's pretty sad when his parents let him.
Nice.
And then he asked me why I'd moved out there. He's like, oh, why you're from Winnipeg? I'm like, yes. He's like, why did you move here? I'm like, for work. It's like, oh, so you had to move to Edmonton to find a job. And I was like, actually, my company had to move me out here so I could be in charge of 300 of you.
So good.
So
I don't think you ever told me that part. That's amazing.
So then they anyways, the fans eventually got so fed up with me that they started throwing peanuts at me.
Yep.
So I just caught the peanuts and ate them. All right.
So good.
And then they wised up, and then it turned into like money. They threw like pennies and nickels at me.
Yep.
But then I had to like fuck off because like.
Well, were you by yourself?
No, I was with a couple of people. Okay. But it was getting pretty bad.
Getting pretty bad.
So we had to get the hell out of there right at the end of the game too, because it was, you know, it probably wasn't going to be a good situation.
No.
But that continued. Even though I was the dink, that still. I blamed Edmonton for the whole experience. And then I work, and you know, I won't get too deep into the work stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
But I've worked in call centers, and I worked in a call center there. And as with any place, there are many, 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 many good people that work there. But there's always characters.
Yes.
And in this call center, it had like, by far, like the biggest cast of characters.
Sorry, wasn't there a sunshine boy in the?
No, that was not in. That was a Winnipeg one.
Oh, it was Winnipeg. Okay, that sorry, was sorry.
One, yes. Yeah. The guy that left our company and was then the sunshine boy, like 2 weeks later.
At some point, didn't you have one of the two sports guys working there too?
Nice. Yes, in Winnipeg. That was right. One of the.
Feel free to edit that out. Slip.
But in Edmonton. I guess the one story that I usually will tell is when I had to let someone go from the organization who, and I'm trying to think of the right term to use, was a little person who,
so
a very miserable little person.
You're pretty PC, Poops.
I'm very PC. Yeah.
Not on this show, right?
Sorry,
who then may have been small in stature, but large in their anger.
Yes,
at me when this was happening, including wanting to fight me. And for those of you that have seen me, I'm not like hulking, but I'm, you know, well over 2 bills and, you know, relatively tall.
You're a lot of man.
yes,
a lot of man.
And getting challenged by the little person, he probably could have beat my ass. He was so angry.
Yep.
But that's probably my favorite story of the whole thing.
Well, he stood on a chair to get eye to eye with you, didn't he?
Yeah. And he screamed at me like we were in
this
an
is
office.
Crap.
We were in an office and people were working, and like the whole side of the room could hear him screaming, "This is crap!
This is crap! This is crap!"
at me, and like, with his eyes bugged out. And then when he tore up his letter. Or he didn't tear it up. He crumpled it up and he threw it in a wastebasket.
Yep.
And then he stormed out. And he walked out the door. And then all of a sudden he stopped and he turned around and looked at me. And as calmly as can be was like, how do I go about getting my last paycheck?
So good.
So I was like, well, I was going to explain it to you, but we had this incident. He's like, I'd like to know. I'm like, will you be calm if I go explain it to you? Yes. Okay, let's go back. So we went back to the room, and I'm like, you can get your letter out of the garbage.
So good.
And he'd like to read it.
That's when he crumbled up. Did.
And about 1 minute later, this is crap.
Back to it again.
This is crap. And out he went. So
that's awesome.
He just couldn't make up his mind.
Good old Edmonton. So I remember going out there and you telling me being like the most exciting thing. Was the winking CN logo on the side of the building that would kind of wink at you at night?
Yeah, the downtown building that had like the CN logo that would like slowly fill up, like, you know, bit by bit, and then had a little wink at the end.
Because
they don't fix their signs.
That's what I remember. We also talked at length about the Epcor factory on the edge of the river there.
So
on the riverbanks.
If you're driving from Edmonton from the south. And you go straight up, whatever it is, Highway 2, which turns into, I don't know what the name of the street is, but it's a, you know, it's a main drag.
Is it a White Mud or something? Or?
No, that goes around.
Okay.
But there's one that goes straight north. And you drive towards downtown, and then when you get to downtown, there's actually a large river valley that goes all the way through the city of Edmonton.
Yep.
So you have to drive down into the valley, and then across the river, and then back up and you're downtown.
Yep.
And the valley is nice. Like, it's parks.
Oh, there's
parks
some pictures. Very nice.
Yeah. Parks and baseball diamonds. And,
yeah. It's know, very nice visual, Edmonton, from that area.
But Epcor, and I don't know if it's still Epcor at this time, but
who knows?
At the time, the company was Epcor. Plunks, like, this giant factory, like, in the most prominent location. And it's, like, it's not hidden. It's just, like, totally misplaced, like, big fucking factory.
Yep.
Sitting right there. So you drive past it with people and be like, that's like ugly, like way to ruin your valley. And then I'd be like, it's dumping. Like, look at it dumping crap into the river. And that you could see it like coming out of the building.
Yeah, yeah.
And people from Edmonton would deny it. They'd be like,
no,
it's not doing that. And I'm like, look at what it's doing like, right now. There's also, there's actually another, there was a, when I lived about four blocks from work, and there was a two-block part on Jasper Avenue that stunk like sewage, like clearly like sewage. And I'm not saying that's unique to Edmonton. There's parts of Winnipeg that stink. But it stunk there, and you'd walk past it, and the Edmontonians would be like,
"It doesn't stink.
I smell nothing."
That'd be like someone who lives in Windsor Park being like, "I don't smell Rothesay Red Nearing Plant. I don't smell it." And when everybody smells it,
Edmonton has a similar complex to what some people in Winnipeg have. When I first got there, I would talk to people that I worked with. And I would say, I was just general conversation. They'd be like, because Edmonton's the second biggest city in Alberta. It's true.
Yep.
Calgary is the biggest city in Alberta.
Yep.
Edmonton's the capital. Calgary's the capital. No, it's not. I'm like, and this is more like Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So you can just pull it up and be like, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
here's the population.
They'd be like, that's not true. It's not. And there was all sorts of things that people would deny. And I eventually said to someone, like, you need to leave the city and then see what people say.
Yeah.
Like, you need to get out of this situation and see what people are saying. There was also a moment where, Edmonton.
Everything.
There was a moment where, this was in 2001 when Stockwell Day was the leader of the...
Was he
jet skiing up and down the river?
Yes.
And he was going through all his like controversies and shit.
Roamed with humans. Yeah,
that ousted him from the party. So this stuff would be in the front page of the papers every day. And I was sitting there, and I was like out loud to another colleague of mine who was from Manitoba, like just saying, like, I don't understand how someone could, like, this is a real thing. And then it dawned on me that I needed to be quiet because I'm sitting amongst people where it's like, this is what they vote for.
This is their reality.
This is what they do. Yeah. Like, they're just like, this is what we believe.
Yep.
And it's such a different mindset from everything else. So that was the Edmonton experience in a nutshell. I counted down for the last 4 months. If you asked me every day, I knew exactly to the day how many days I had left at Edmonton.
When did you return again?
December 1st.
December
2011.
2001.
I was supposed to come
2001.
Back, or 2001. I was supposed to come back a month later, and I orchestrated a way to get out a month earlier.
That's right.
Oh, there. Yeah, I couldn't get out fast enough.
Yeah. So then you were here for a little while, then you went and fucked off to Ottawa.
And Ottawa was great.
I remember driving out with you.
Ottawa was awesome.
Driving out with you to Ottawa, flying back, and then flying in and driving back with you, and you moved home back in 2006.
Yeah.
Grand return.
I liked it out there. It was a good city.
Back to Edmonton, when you were 2001, the Oilers, when you were there, they were not a good team.
They were.
Was that in Mike Comrie time?
This was when Mike Comrie was kind of an exciting young player.
Like, he was in his 50-point kind of seasons, and people were like way into it. Yeah.
And Doug Waite was still there.
Yeah.
So they were still.
Were they 1 year removed from, or did they make the playoffs that year?
They might have.
I think they did.
They weren't. If
God,
they
we don't have the TV with Wikipedia on it. I got to look them on my phone.
If they didn't make the playoffs that year, they weren't like a crappy team that didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were far removed from being a powerhouse. But it was still good hockey.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you liked, and then Tom Pody was there. So you were well set. For having for Tom your favorite Foley. Your favorite player. How many games did you go see when you were in Edmonton?
Not many.
No,
five. Four or five.
Still yelled at Tom Pody though.
Of course he's a piece of shit.
So you go off to Ottawa and have all sorts of adventures there. You became a big Sens fan.
I did. Now that was hockey.
Yes. We've talked about this at length, so if you wanna talk about this again, let's go for it.
This was, you know, and again, like, I'm gonna tie it back to Winnipeg, right? I start going to Sens games. I got there in April of 2003.
Yeah.
And the Senators, that Stanley Cup playoff, got all the way to game 7 of the conference final. They lost
New Jersey.
And they lost with a goal scored on them with a minute left.
That's right.
And it was weird. Like, it was weird because, like, it was getting into the spring, like, well into the spring, like May. And there's hockey going on and people are excited about it. I'm like,
what is this?
I was like, I've never, hockey ends in April. Like, I live in Winnipeg. We've never had NHL hockey here in May. So I'm like, this is interesting. And they were a good team. And then they choked out. And people give the Senators a lot of crap for choking out a lot. But they were always a good team. And then the next year was kind of a standard season. And they didn't do so well in the playoffs. And then there was a lockout.
Yep.
And then after the lockout, they come back and they're like for the first 60 games of the year, they're like the best team in hockey. And we're talking like, this is the Alfredsson, Healy, Spezza top line. This is Havlat, Fisher, Chris Kelly, Peter Schaefer. Their defense is crazy. It's like Redden, Chara when he came into his own.
Yep.
Volchenkov, Mizaros when he was a good rookie. Hasek was their goalie. Emery was their goalie.
Yeah, it's a great time.
And so I'm watching these games and I'm like, this is the best club league, NHL's club league, right?
Yeah.
This is the best brand of this hockey I'm ever going to watch.
Yeah.
And that I've ever seen.
Yep.
Is a team that's like the top team in the league. And when a team comes in to play this team, even a good one, you're like, the expectation is that this team will win.
Yeah.
And they do win.
Yeah. And you were there when they had the pizza line.
Yeah. And
like they were offering pizzas for 7 goals.
Yeah. There was no worry or concern. Like playoffs, the discussion of will it be a playoff team? Like that was never discussed.
No.
Cause they were the top team, right? And yeah. And then they had a promotion where if the Sens actually started at 4, if they scored 4 goals in 1, your ticket got you free pizza. And they had to raise it to 5, and then they had to raise it to 6 because everyone was winning pizza.
Yeah.
And then when the Sens would get to 5 goals, people would start chanting for pizza.
Yeah.
Which is the greatest chant ever.
Pizza. Yeah. Pizza. Pizza. Pizza.
You get a whole pizza?
You get a slice.
Oh, but still, hey, slice of pizza. It's a slice of pizza pie. Not bad.
I mean, if that promotion was in Winnipeg, oh.
Well, I know.
It'll be dynamite. I know. Free shit here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So good. People go nuts.
Yeah. So, but it was, and the other good thing about the Sens at that time was the Carell Center, which is what it was called when I was there,
yep.
is still, to me, the best arena in the NHL because it's perfect sight lines everywhere.
Yeah.
And the upper bowl, not only when you're in the last row, not only is there, nothing behind you, but there's actually a walkway back there.
Yeah.
So you can be on the opposite side of the arena, get up, walk around the arena and get out of it.
Yeah.
And you can still see the game the whole way that you're walking through there, nice. Right? So it was just a beautiful arena and the tickets to that upper section were $15.
Fantastic. I remember you calling me once from a playoff game. Do you remember what playoff game that was?
Games 6 against the Leafs. They were down 3-2 and they won in double overtime.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was good.
It's good times.
And they lost that series though. Then Patrick Laliem let 3 goals through his legs.
Yeah, so what year was that? That was 2004?
2004.
2004 was when Laliem let the goals in from Nieuwendijk from the face-off circle in between the pad and the post.
And I'll tell you something. I don't I'm one of those the first people to make fun of those people that yell shoot. So someone's got the puck at the point and the whole crowd's like shoot, even if it's the worst decision to shoot the puck.
Yep.
But in the watching playoff overtime?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Just shoot.
You yell shoot. Shoot. You lose your mind.
Oh yeah.
When you're at those games.
Oh yeah.
For a team.
And in that era of the NHL, when goals did not come cheap, you better just throw the puck on net. Joe Nieuwendijk is who he is.
Yeah. I was at that game on my own and I was still shoot. so crazy. So yeah, it was good. It was good. Ottawa's known as it's honestly as fondly as I speak about Ottawa and about the Senators, Ottawa's a very bad sports city.
Yeah.
It's a very bad sports city. The Senators get good crowds because it's NHL. You're going to get that anywhere. And at the time, they'd won for so long that they're going to sell out a big arena. Junior hockey did fine in Ottawa as well. But everything else was a failure, including I went to Renegades. And that's the football team that Ottawa had between the Rough Riders and the Red Blacks. They had a team for 4 years called the Renegades.
With Kerry Joseph.
With Kerry Joseph.
Oh, they moved Saskatchewan to Ottawa?
No Kid Tetris.
I love Kid Tetris. Best ever.
So one of the seasons, I decided I was going to get a season pass to CFL.
Yep.
And the motivation was that They have one stand that was just one long stand.
Yep.
And then another stand that had an upper and lower deck.
Yep.
So the upper deck on that stand, which was the south side stand, they decided that all the south side upper seats, they were going to sell a season pass for $99.
Yep.
So for $99, you got a pass you wore around your neck, and you could sit anywhere.
Okay.
So on that end, it was really good. But then, this is the team at the time owned by the Gleibermans. They decided that they were also going to have a Southside promotion where when you came to the game, they would hand every person a set of beads. So, like, that you wear around your neck. And they were like, to the ladies at the game, if you collect the most beads and turn them in at the end of the game, we'll give you $1,000. Kid Tetris, can you guess how some of the ladies went about collecting beads?
Take a guess. Probably asking very nicely. Yeah. With their bosoms.
So, what happened was, for $99, who are you going to get sitting in the section? You're going to get the students.
Yep.
And you're going to get families.
Yep.
So, that was the mix.
Terrible mix.
And then you've got... You know what? There were not actually many women who went the whole way to do it, but just there were a lot that teased it. And so what would happen is a girl would get up and she'd turn around and face everybody, and the whole section would rise, and you couldn't fucking see the game, which was annoying because everyone's standing, not paying attention to the game.
Yeah.
And then they had to bring cops into the section too, and the cops would be like ready. To like honed in to take care of business if stuff happened. So it was just a distraction. There were enough that did like, you know, flash that they got tons of complaints. And then Hurricane Katrina happened in New Orleans that summer.
Yeah.
And then they decided, you know, maybe the whole bead promotion is, you know, at that point they were like, you know what, maybe this is tasteless.
You know, that's what it took. Took a hurricane to stop them.
so that, and then they never sold out a game, the Renegades. I know the Red Blacks are doing pretty well now.
Yeah.
The Renegades never sold out a game, and then they folded. The baseball team when I was there folded. The lacrosse team folded the year before I got there.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not a very good sports town.
No.
It's very, like, we hear, like, it's conservative and... Not necessarily like politically conservative, just like lots of families and government workers and bland. And to a large extent, that's what it was. But I liked it.
Liked Ottawa.
It was a good city.
So you are, though, a native Winnipegger. You grew up right down the road, down the perimeter from here, down in St. Vitale.
I did. On Easy Street.
On Easy Street, which you did touch on in at least one of your episodes.
Me and TJ, Vaughn,
you and TJ, and then you and I talked about it in mine. So, you are a native St. Vitaler.
St. Vitale is a place to be. What do you think, Kid Tetris?
It was a nice street.
Easy Street.
Easy Street? Did you ever get over to Easy Street at all?
Yeah, you had the drum set in the basement.
Hey, there we go. Yes.
That's another... you were a...
that was the brick house, right?
Yeah. My parents were like, who's this guy that you brought over? What's this weird guy?
Dude had a pool.
We had a pool.
Jukebox down the basement?
Saw the pool.
Jukebox.
Would you kick it to start like the Fonz?
St. Patel. I mean,
What's there to say?
It's like the most like plain suburban existence that I had.
Yeah.
I always thought until I worked in Edmonton, I thought that like people like with like fucked up family situations, I thought that was just like a rarity.
Yeah.
To me, it was just like, you know, everyone, you know, it's your family. You all get along.
Yep.
Get along with your grandparents. You get along with your cousins. Like, you know, there's like funny things like, oh, did you hear so-and-so did this, you know, whatever. But everyone gets along and you visit them and, you know, it's rare for families to fall apart or to fight or all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you know, I've learned a lot about reality since then, which...
Yes.
So now realizing that I was pretty fortunate and, you know, growing up that everything was pretty normal.
Yep.
I mean, shenanigans that I had and that we had were like, you know, like they make for good stories.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no like real, like,
no.
We never got in trouble with the cops.
Hang on one second. We almost did once. I was going to segue into that. You tell us about your run-in with the cops,
We did have one run-in with the cops. You're right. So if you remember the club...
Which
is this device that you would stick on your steering wheel so that people couldn't steal your car, which is like essential car hardware for Winnipeg
back in the 90s.
So my mom had like a knockoff product called the Sentinel.
The Sentinel!
I didn't even know they made a knockoff.
It wasn't even the glove. It was the Sentinel.
Well, the Sentinel.
Hold on. What is a Sentinel?
Like,
is it some kind of
is it like an actual thing? Like, let's look it up.
Like, I know that it's I don't want to sound dumb saying what it is because I don't really know. So Kid Tetris is going to look it up. Right, so and he'll let us know.
So anyway, so the Sentinel, but it had the long part at the top, which would
extend.
Or it would press up against the windshield.
Yeah.
And then it had the bottom part, which extended with the two hooks.
Yeah.
So you'd extend it so it would hook around each side of the
steering wheel. Yeah.
Well, you noticed very quickly that if you held on to the two hooks.
Sorry, how is it spelled?
S-E-N.
Oh.
T-I-N-E-L.
There you go.
If you held onto the two hook parts, it would look like a Gatling gun.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So we would drive around.
Okay, here we go.
Here you go.
Sentinel. A soldier or guard whose job is to stand and keep watch.
Hey, there you go. Hey, the Sentinel.
What a great name for the product.
Perfect.
There you go.
So you would hold it, and it would look like a little gun.
Yeah.
And you'd wear shades.
Yeah.
And you would stare menacingly out the window of the car. And, like, this was something that you do on and off probably for, like, 6 months.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
For a long time.
Like an idiot, by the way. Like an idiot. Yeah.
Well, anyways, we're out one day doing whatever. And then we get back to my place on Easy Street.
Mm-hmm.
And when we turn onto the block, there are two police cars sitting in the driveway.
We're like, what?
At my place. We're like, what the hell's going on here? So we go inside, and the police are having coffee, like
with my mom,
and then they're like, "We had reports of a license plate like matching the one out there that you had a gun in the car," and we're like, oh, "Shit,
it's the Sentinel."
So we showed them, and then they had a good chuckle.
Like, well, came what happened was I actually pointed it at somebody, and they ducked. For God's sakes. They fucking ducked.
Yeah, well,
right there on St. Mary's, like right across from the Bellevue Strip Mall.
I believe that the term you guys coined for this kind of stuff was crimin.
Yes, doing crimin.
Yeah, crimin. Yeah, yeah.
We used to go Safeway? Down to Safeway in Osborne Village,
on and Halloween?
we'd move products and put them in different spots. And there used to be this little witch that was hanging from the ceiling on Halloween, and when you went by it, it started cackling.
There's a couple catchphrases. So
best witches.
Best witches.
So, like, crime is basically, like, being a nuisance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you're not actually you're not committing a crime.
No.
But you're
no.
being a nuisance.
Well, we used to go and we'd be like, let's go do some crime. And we'd go around doing stupid things.
I saw some, I mean, there's crime on different levels. I saw some good crime recently. There's a picture of this woman in, kind of ad it was. But anyway, her head was cocked back and her mouth was wide open. So, someone drew this picture. I'm sure you can guess what it is. It was a cock. aimed right for her mouth, and it was, and I had to hold myself from laughing in the car because I looked like a complete moron, laughing to myself in traffic. But it was
that's fucking funny.
Crimin.
That's crime. Yeah. So we did some crime.
You know, like if you scratch something on a bathroom wall, like you know, that's you know, like crime. Like
well,
that's what it was.
KT here did some crime when I lived in when I lived downtown. He drew with his keys in the elevator. He drew pictures of dicks.
Oh yeah. I carved.
He carved dicks into the door of the elevator.
I think I drew like a human sized wang on the fucking door.
Just like he was just like ridiculous. Wang.
Didn't you used to when Poops lived downtown and you'd go and visit him? You just park your car in the no parking zone right in front of the door and put the hazards on and go up and do it for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
We just leave it there and I'll just
KT doesn't give a fuck about nothing.
No, we used to. I had a Volkswagen Golf and it came with a car alarm back in the 90s. And we used to drive in traffic and turn on the car alarm. People think we're secret police. And then we get out of the way. They think we're an emergency vehicle. So we had to clear traffic out pretty quick. We just hit the alarm and it would start going off. And people would think we're something special.
That is crime.
Yeah.
That's crime, so. 100%.
All right, let's take a break from all the action to go over a couple of quick notes. You can follow Beyond the Handle on Twitter at Beyond the Handle. Go over there for news and notes on this show. Even more importantly, though, because this show may be going on hiatus, or I don't even know, give me some time to figure it out, and I'll keep you posted. But in the meantime, if you're looking to fill your podcast daily content, go over to the Garbage Hill Network, garbagehillnetwork.com. We've proudly been a member of the network from the very beginning, and you can find a lot of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. I'm just at the website now. A couple of examples I've seen right on here. The Triple Deek podcast just joined Garbage Hill Network recently. Winnipeg Hockey Talk is on there. Mitch Kasprick was on Beyond the Handle a couple of months ago and knows his stuff when it comes to hockey, so follow that. Couch Surfing is Devin Bray's podcast, and Devin also is running the Garbage Hill Network. He was on Beyond the Handle as well. Witch Police Radio is a great place for music talk. Loose Ropes Wrestling for some wrestling talk, including coverage of local wrestling, which is great. No One Is Safe podcast, which is a weekly podcast of a variety of topics of discussion. Always entertaining, always fun. Comes out on Sundays. What else have we got here? What have I heard? Beyond the Handle. No, that's me. Also, though, The Mezzanine Sleepover, which is a podcast that I co-host with my pal Poops McKenzie. That is, we're going to do our very best to have that show live on. And that's just shooting the shit about current events as well. And we do a review of something every week. And that something really, really varies depending on what we feel like reviewing. And we have lists, which usually involve music. Top 5 list was our intention, but we've done top 7. We recently did a top 26. We counted down songs, or actually we listed songs, from 1990 to 2015 that we thought were notable for each year. And each of us had one, so that covered 2 episodes. Anyways, run over to garbagehillnetwork.com right now and find something for your ears. I guarantee that you'll find something good over there. Anyways, with all that being said, let's get back into part 2 of this lengthy interview with me at Slip Sleep, hosted by Poops McKenzie, here on Beyond the Handle.
You may have the topic lined up here, but seeing as the topic
of... Do whatever you want.
Speaking as we're on the topic of vehicles.
Yes.
So, I drove a number of interesting vehicles after I got my license. The most interesting of which was my dad had this... My dad had... he always had boats and he always had trucks.
Yeah.
And they're always new. And then one day he decided, I'm not going to have a boat anymore. And so he got rid of the boat. And then he's like, I don't need to tow the boat around, so I'm going to get rid of the boat and I'm going to get a car. He got a 1985 Nissan, I think it was a Maxima.
Okay.
I don't even know, like, it was a Nissan, so like, you know, it's that kind of car, but it was like the closest looking thing to a DeLorean that we ever had.
Nice.
Basically. But then he was like, not too long after that, he was like, you know, I'm just going to get a used boat. And I'm going to get a used truck. So he got this used truck, and it was this red truck. And we immediately, at the time, we had this fascination with the show Ghost Rider.
Yes, we were in, I was in grade 12. I was in grade 12. Grade 11 and 12, and we liked to watch Ghost Rider when we got home. Like, in our own houses, not together. We'd watch Ghost Rider and then talk about it.
We don't rush to your place to watch Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Come on. No, yeah. But we would watch Ghost Rider, and we had a crush on Blaze Burdall, yeah, who played this character called Lenny.
And you know, before anybody starts like saying anything or thinking it's disgusting, Blaze Burdall is only 3 years younger than me. So it's not like she was that young at the
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
She was only 3 years younger than me.
It's a girl.
It's not too bad. Yeah. So yeah.
So we named the truck Lenny. And the best part about Lenny was that I discovered that Lenny could be started with anything at all. You didn't need the key. You could actually just, with your fingers,
you could turn, just turn the thing
and turn it on. Lenny. So we just turn Lenny on with like anything.
It's like, oh, look, I'm going to use a knife, Lenny.
Yeah. So that was that vehicle. And, I inherited a Nissan.
An Altima
that used to squeal whenever I would turn.
Yeah.
Just squeal away.
Just like, you know, back then, when I was young and didn't like maintain anything.
No, and then you, the second car you inherited was the exact same car.
Yeah.
Same car.
Yeah.
You inherited an Altima, and then your mom got another Altima.
Yeah.
And then you inherited the next Altima. Best.
I just traded up Altimas over time. But
an Altima man.
But we, you know, Lenny, I think, was the only one that I named, but then your cars we always named.
Oh, yeah.
It was the White Knight.
Yeah, the White Knight.
We had an 82 Toyota Celica or Celica. Yeah. Called it the White Knight. That's a car where I did not maintain it, and it just went to shit.
Because we watched a movie that we're actually going to review on Mezzanine Sleepover called The Stoned Age, and they had a car, and they called it the Blue Torpedo. So we were like,
we got to name our cars. Got
to
name it.
Obviously, we have to name our cars.
Yes.
So
isn't that with like Sean Astin or something? Or
No.
Well, that's Encino Man. Never mind.
Yeah, it's Encino Man.
Yes. It's
well, they're set in the same area.
They are.
Stone Age is a stoner comedy in the vein of Dazed and Confused.
Oh, okay, then.
But it's way better.
I thought it had something to do with cavemen.
Yeah.
Like Pauly Shore and all that shit.
The other thing that we didn't just name cars, but we nicknamed everything.
Yes.
Like everyone around us had a nickname, and like that goes to this day.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like Kid Tetris, we just, you know.
Yeah.
I called you LT for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I called you anything else.
I don't think so.
To your face. You know.
Oh, just all sorts of names. Like, you had a nickname, talking about Scalane.
I was Alan until grade 9, and then Scalane was my name.
Everybody called you that at school.
If I ran into somebody that I was friends with in high school today who I haven't seen in 20 years, they would call me Scal. Like, that's.
Like, what's up, Scalane?
I don't think I've ever called you Alan. Ever.
I don't think so either.
He just calls you by your last name.
Everyone calls you Gates.
And lots of people call me Gates.
Even my folks call you Gates.
Yep. Yeah, everyone at work used to call me Gates,
too. What did John Caleb used to call you? John used to call you Gage.
Gage.
How's your friend Gage?
My parents named me Alan Caleb. with the intention that people would call me Al. But it never happened. It was always either Alan or one of these other names.
Paul Simon.
Sorry, that's terrible.
We put names on everyone, right?
Oh, everybody.
Like starting in high school. So just at some examples off the top.
Yeah, a name came to my head a few days ago. Brian Dust.
Yes, there was Brian Dust. Of course, there was. I think the biggest one for us was a guy that at the time we were friends with named Sean Lamb.
Yep.
So we call him Slam.
And that name had been around for a long time.
And then, famously, there was, he used to have little crushes when we were in high school. And at one point in time, he had a crush on this girl named Kara. Not the Kara that you're thinking of.
Not the Kara. Were you gonna say?
What about the other?
Yeah. But we were sitting in jazz band one day, and I don't know whatever burn was laid on me, but there was some good burn that was laid on me by Kara, which I responded, "Whatever you say, clam."
So insinuating
that she'd be married to Sean because he had a crush on her, but she was clam. So clam stuck with that person
for years,
forever, for years and years and
it's
years.
Not clam.
There was this girl who was, I think, 2 years younger than us.
Yep.
And she wouldn't dress like she wasn't dressed like Stephanie K from Degrassi, like in that vein, where it's just like, Stephanie K, if you ever watch the show, just dressed like trampy.
Yes.
She was more like dressed up for the bar.
Yeah.
All the time. Like every day at school.
Yeah. Short skirts and. Yeah.
So her name was TNC. That's what we called her, which stood for Tammy No Clothes. Because
we were really funny.
So there was that. There was Jockstrap Johnson.
Jockstrap Johnson.
I was anointed Anal Al.
Anal Al.
You know, so we had that. We had, you had JP Cousin.
Oh, God.
What about the sub teacher?
We had MB Cousin.
We had Mr. Ryder.
What about the guy's sweatpants?
Yeah. Mr. Ryder.
There was Monsieur Pinchot.
I didn't even know that guy, what his real name was for like 3 years because we just called her Mr. Ryder.
That's your whole class called him Mr. Ryder.
So we had Mr. Ryder. Then we got to university.
And then it just went off.
And then, for example, there's an episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns is trying to convince Bart to leave his family. So he shows, he's like, Bart, we've got live video on your family at home. So they open up, they turn on the video, and it's clearly actors playing the rest of Bart's family.
Yeah.
And the guy playing Homer drops a cup, and he goes, Bo. And so then he gets corrected by the producer. He's like, Homer Simpson doesn't say Bo. He says Do. So I used to say Bo.
Bo.
And then for whatever reason, at some point in time.
I remember exactly when it happened.
All right, you tell me when I said
it. I remember exactly what happened. We were sitting at this girl Danielle's house, and I don't know if we just watched Broken Arrow, you know, that John Travolta flick, that terrible John Travolta Christian Slater flick from the mid-90s. And we were sitting there and we were drawing pictures to each other. So you draw a little picture of a cat and you'd be like, you would say, I have these pictures still. You drew the picture of the cat and you had him saying a mouse flambeau, which if you look up mouse flambeau, you'll see that it's a one of those vignettes from the National Film Board.
It was from the Big Snit.
It was a short film about fire safety and how fire can spread really quickly. And the cat talks and he talks to himself about how, do you got any cream? And maybe I could have a mouse flambeau. And he licks his lips. So you wrote mouse flambeau with a cat. And then you drew something like a Homer Simpson and he was saying Bo. And then we were talking and we're going back and forth. So I was like, we were like, Doe, and you were like, Bo, and I was like, Doeth, because there was an episode of Simpsons where he said Doeth, and then you were just like, Both. And then we just started saying Both. So, anytime anything ever happened, even to this day, I stubbed my toe, Both.
So Both was our version of Doe, and then when we went to first year university, we would say Both, and we were actually watching a video about the whole Oka.
Yeah.
Like the standoff in Quebec in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And we were saying to each other Both a lot. And there was this girl that was sitting in the library, and whenever we'd say Both, she would look up at us. So we just figured
that must be her name. So her name's Both.
So from that point on, she was Both.
And by the way, anybody who wants to know and wants a visual in their brain, Both is spelled B-A-W-T-H.
Yes. Yes, for all those people that are just dying.
Yeah, well, and also Kid Tetris. He needs to visualize.
And then we had a wrestling federation, Backyard Wrestling Federation. So everybody that was involved with that, we ended up just calling them by their wrestling names. Ali O'Gratton, Mistopheles, Johnny Superb. Then Ali O'Gratton told Johnny Superb wants to move his big bison head out of the way. So we called him Johnny Bizon
for years. What's up, so Bizon?
We had Johnny Bizon. We had tons and tons of them.
Just over and over.
And the only one for the longest time that didn't really have a nickname that stuck was Old Poops over here.
Yep.
Until Mistopheles decided to give him the name Tackle Box, which didn't stick.
It did not stick.
But now Poops has come up, and at least for the purposes of this stuff, there's Poops. But nicknames have always been a big part of it.
They've evaded me, which is strange. But yeah, I 100% agree. Lots of names.
Lots of names.
So we talk about the wrestling. We touched on that in my podcast there, but... You were a accomplished backyard wrestler. You were in the Whip-Ass Wrestling Federation as multiple characters.
I think I was kind of like the Kevin Nash.
You were, absolutely.
Of our wrestling, where it was like I had very, very marginal wrestling skill and marginal mic skill, but I managed to maneuver myself into the right situations.
Well, you were
to, take advantage of my strengths.
Well, and you and I were also the head bookers, so we kind Which of helped. Just it helped.
Again, but Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash.
You know, pretty
no,
much.
But Kevin Nash did have that limited moveset, but the moves that you did do, you had some good moves. You had some great moves.
So I was not shy about doing the job. I did the job.
Yep.
Plenty of times. For plenty of people. No problems there.
Nope.
Never pulled any politics.
Yep.
But the whole whip-ass thing started at my place.
Yes,
it did. We watched WrestleMania 13 with a bunch of guys from school, and we were all so hyped up that we brawled in the basement. And then the next day, we've told this story on the Poops McKenzie version of the show. The next day, we did wrestling at school.
Yeah.
And it just went from there.
And we didn't just have one character each. So we had multiple characters. And of course, you know, if you've seen the big man, is that he's not a very conspicuous kind of guy. And so whenever you would play a different character, It was it, you
it was
had to,
clearly
it
me.
Was clearly you.
It was and like now, me with a different shirt.
Yeah, and, but it was like so clearly you.
Yeah.
But let's run down some of the guys that you were. So your main guy.
My main guy was Shazam the Cisco Genie.
Now you started out
when we were in GLWF, which was our high school wrestling federation. And by federation, I mean
two
me,
of us.
Me and Poops wrestling each other.
Two of us wrestling each other at school.
I had I was my main character was Razor Scalone.
Yep.
Because Razor Ramon, but Scal.
Yes.
And then Razor Scalone had another character named Side Highlander. And
it was his alter ego.
And the storyline was that it was the same guy, but people didn't know, which is stupid.
Yeah, very dumb. It was like Midnight Rider or Yellow Dog. It was the same thing.
So Side Highlander.
Mr. America.
Side Highlander migrated to Whoopass for one event. And then I listened to the song Open Sesame Part 2 by Kool and the Gang.
Which we touched on in the Mezzanine Sleepover.
Yeah, which makes reference to Genies and Shazam. And I was like, I'm going to change the name to Shazam the Cisco Genie. So from San Francisco, California, it's Shazam the Cisco Genie.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything genie-like about me for like the longest time.
Well, you posed.
I would wear a black t-shirt.
Yeah.
I would wear a pair of plaid like pajama pants. And I would wear a pair of spandex over the pajama pants, sometimes with the legs tucked up so that they were like little gitch.
Yeah.
Is what they would like little wrestling panties.
Yeah. And that would be what I would wrestle in. Now, in later days, a gimmick that I wish I had done was that I would actually, when I would go home, because I wasn't living at home at the time, I'd actually like sneak a pair of my dad's gitch out of the pantry.
And I would wear out of the pantry?
Out of the pantry. That's all. We all eat. It's all having gitch for dinner. Out of the laundry. Yeah, out of the hamper. Clean gitch. dirty gitch.
And, out of the pantry. And next to cereal.
Oh, Jesus.
And I would wear the
gitch. Gotch for breakfast.
And I would wear the gitch.
And you'd write on them. You'd write, like, your name on the back.
Across the ass. And then when Shaz would like hulk up, like when I was beaten down and then I would make my comeback to get myself fired up, I would rip the gitch off like Hogan used to rip off his
I think I've seen that.
T-shirt.
It's nasty.
I'd rip it off. Yeah, I would rip the gitch
off. Because it'd ride right up. Yeah. It'd ride right up. Yeah. So right up the inside of his thighs.
But I only managed to do that like once or twice. And I wish that had always been the gimmick because that would have been great.
It was gold.
So there was that character.
And Shazam Cisco Genie was his main guy.
Yeah.
Shazam Cisco Genie won multiple titles. You know, was an all-time classic. If there was a Hall of Fame, he'd be a first ballot.
There's a Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There is. He's first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Wasn't one of your guys a war vet?
Yes. So then I had another character named Bobby Bitchin. And Bobby Bitchin was named after a character from a Cheech and Chong comedy skit. And on all Bobby Bitchin in the comedy skit, when they would interview him for this talk show, all he would say is bitchin'. Like, how you doing, bitchin'? So I was like, okay, I'm going to have Bobby bitchin', and that's basically all he's going to say. And his gimmick initially was that he was from Flint, Michigan,
yep.
And he was a hardworking man. He was just like a construction man, but he was a jobber.
So he looked like Shazam wearing jeans and a black t-shirt.
Yeah.
And rubber boots.
Yeah. No, those came later. So initially he wore just rubber boots, jeans, and a t-shirt, and a construction hat.
And he was a jobber.
Okay.
Then he teamed up and got into a tag team with Biff the Steamroller McDougal, another hardworking man. Then they won the lottery and became Bobby Business and Biff the Downsizer McDougal.
Menatwork.com.
Menatwork.com because they were rich.
Yeah. Menatwork.com.
Then they blew their riches and then they split up. And Bobby Bitchin kind of went and he went missing. And then when he came back, where he had gone was over to Afghanistan. And he was a war hero, yeah. So he had fought in the war, and he came back, and for some reason, he was pretty much the same guy, except that he wore these suspenders
and over medals, his shoulders, right?
And medals.
And a medal, and he would pump the suspenders.
And he would pump the suspenders.
And he would also play them like a guitar along to his music, which was Primus's.
Here Come the Bastards.
Here Come the Bastards.
Primus. And he would choke his opponents with the suspenders. And Bobby Bitchin is the only character that I was recognized for outside of Whoopass. When I was at work one day, and this kid walked up to me, who was working in the office, and was like, "Are you Bobby Bitchin?"
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
So there's Bobby Bitchin.
Yeah.
I had a character. So we had a character named El Alieno. And El Alieno was a senior. He was a 60-some-odd old luchador wrestler from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he wore an alien mask.
That was me.
And that was Poops. But Alieno died. He died
in the ring. Yeah.
And so
a tasteful angle, by
yes.
the way.
So then his nephew, Alieno II, which is a common thing in Mexico, is that there's various versions, like there's sequels to wrestlers. So Alieno II was me.
Yeah.
So now the joke is, you know, we go to this like 5'11", like 200 and some odd pound luchador.
Yeah.
Where like the only like lucho thing I could do is kind of a somersault.
He couldn't do any flipping.
But yeah, I couldn't
not
do any
like,
flipping.
Not like I could do any flipping yeah, before. Right. But at that point, the mask that I bought at San Francisco in Garden City Mall, same place I bought the Hulk Domo mask, by the way, the eyes would no longer stay in. So in the first match, Alieno 2 comes out in his debut match. It's a big debut. He comes running into the ring, and this is the big man. He does a somersault into the ring, and of course, the ring doesn't have ropes. It's just a part of the grass in my backyard at the time. Somersaults in, and the mask flies off. And he immediately covering his face.
It's like if you've ever seen the Shockmaster debut in WCW, which is a very famous debut where on live TV he had to wear a mask, but he tripped through the set and the mask fell off his face. That's exactly what happened to me.
And
we taped it and we just decided to leave it because it was funny.
Because the announcers who were announcing it was so funny and we just kept laughing and then the eyes eventually fell out. And so he's got this alien mask without eyes. And, you know, I think you wore like a robe as a dashing sash around your neck. And
so there was Alieno 2.
Yes.
There was Tokyo Sange, which was again just me, same clothes. But with a monkey mask.
But you had a monkey mask on, so it covered your hair, because your hair was considerable.
Yeah.
These days it's not so bad, but back then you had considerable amount of curly hair all over the place. And Toki Lesange, you found a monkey mask and a No Doubt t-shirt.
Yes.
And you wrestled, and Toki was named after the video game at the Boston Pizza in Brandon.
I got that No Doubt t-shirt at Blockbuster Video for $1.99.
Perfect.
Yeah. And Toki Lesange was a No Doubt fan for whatever reason. And he was from the zoo.
And it was not, this. The gimmick was not, it was a man wearing a monkey mask. The gimmick was, it was an actual like gorilla.
He's a gorilla.
So, there you go.
So anyways, that's just a sampler of...
You had a few other ones. You had a referee named Goblin Ref that danced around like an idiot.
I was the commissioner. I was Slick Nick. We had, our initial commissioner was Dak Maloney. And then he got ousted.
Yep.
And then Slick Nick replaced him. So I was Slick Nick. And then I eventually got ousted and replaced by the Mexican Giant. So yeah, we had a cast of characters.
You know? Yeah, it was very good. So that's Whoopass. We've touched on it a few times.
That's our wrestling. But the Whoopass was a bit, like as you were now during this time. I'll talk a little bit about Kid Tetris here. So you met Kid Tetris as you told before.
Yes.
94. Yeah. And then 95. You are both a year older than me. So. Kid Tetris comes down and you guys go to the U of W.
Yep.
And so we're like still in touch, but you guys are seeing each other at school all the time. And then the next year I go to U of W and then I'm seeing you guys. And then actually kind of all of us, like I wouldn't say we went our separate ways because whenever we'd see each other, everything was good. We just didn't spend a lot of time hanging out for various reasons.
Yep.
And then I moved to Edmonton. And while I was in Edmonton, to further like... throw salt on my wounds as like, you know, the first world problem of having to suffer in Edmonton for 10 months.
Yes.
Is that then I start hearing about stories about the two of you starting to hang out again and going out to Bar Italia and like spending like hours and hours of time.
That was when Jamie took up
smoking.
Sorry, when Poops took up smoking.
Yeah.
And the first night we hung out after I called Jamie up for different reasons. But everything worked out for the best, of course. And he's like, I think he said, "Do you smoke?" I said, "Yeah, I do." He's like, "Well, I took up smoking as well." So he took up smoking while we hadn't talked for a couple of years, I guess.
I don't remember the timeline.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It was either.
Yeah.
And then so we go to meet for. We go to meet for coffee. We used to call them midnight runs.
Midnight runs.
So you go meet for coffee at Bar Italia.
Yep.
And Poop shows up with his pack of DeMaurier, a whole pack, and proceeds to smoke the whole fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
That night.
Nasty.
Like he got down, he had probably maybe eight no, probably 5 or 6 cigarettes left. I'm watching his pack.
It's nasty.
And I had like half a pack left. I would smoke, but not like this guy here. And then he proceeds to turn green.
Yeah, it was bad. I wasn't a...
And he's like, I gotta go.
That was the first time I really smoked.
I'm like, no shit, you have to go. You just smoked a whole fucking pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, like, pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. And then, and then it was a history from there.
So I would hear about this, and all I could think of when I was out there was, I can't wait to go back and just hang out with these guys. And I never smoked.
Yeah.
But I still just wanted to sit there.
Yeah.
And then we
all
did.
I wanted to do was go out on the patio and hang out with you guys.
And then
so
we
I got
did.
Back in December, so it wasn't open.
Nope.
And then when it opened in the spring,
really?
We
yeah.
did.
I never knew
but
that.
But even before yeah. then, yeah. we were, but yeah. you came back and we were like right into like yeah. every night.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing Perfect Dark.
I moved back in 2001 at the end of the year. And you were living, Poops, on Roslyn Road.
Yep.
In a complex where it was like 3 apartments. It was one long building.
99 Roslyn,
3,
right?
Yeah.
3 separate
yeah,
buildings.
3 separate buildings, though. That you yep. had to go out of one building to get into the other one. So I moved into the A building and you were in the C building.
That was a great time.
For like a year.
So good.
So I would go over to your place. I never hosted. And why would I? My place was a dump. I would go over to your place.
You had a pretty nice place, Poops.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't bad.
And
it was a nice place.
Yeah,
and we would go there, and we would we watched the World Cup that year. We yeah. watched the
hockey,
we watched
game.
The hockey gold medal game that year.
Yep.
We played a shit ton of Perfect Dark. Like
yeah.
which at that time was like a 6-year-old game.
I know, and we were just we killed the game.
We killed it.
We burnt it out.
Yeah, we fried the game.
The N64. We had characters. We had like standoffs. We did skits in game. Like we'd be like
fist sim.
Yeah, we'd have standoffs and this guy here and old Slip would be like the guy who would turn on everybody constantly. It'd be like we're friends. Come on.
We'd go in as a team of 4 and we'd be up against like 4 fist sims.
4 sims.
Whatever. And I would be the first. It was like the storyline was always which one of us would be the first one to turn on,
yes.
on his own team,
and it was always you.
And it typically was me. And then Kid Tetris would be the crazy general,
yep.
who would get in and try to defuse the situation.
You know, he'd be all,
like yelling, and then like yelling it at the game, but also at me. Stand down, soldier. Stand down.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And then we get Mistopheles involved. And
you're
then we
the horse.
Guys.
You're the horse that couldn't be tamed.
No,
man.
He couldn't
right.
be tamed. And he'd use the tranquilizer, right?
But,
he'd be like, come on, trank me. And he'd be like, trank me. Come on. He'd stand right in your face and you'd see it in the split. It's a 4 split screen.
Yeah.
And he'd
yeah.
be there. He'd be like, come on, trank me. And you'd see that dirty face looking right at you.
Just getting right up to your camera.
And then you'd get right up into the face, into Crazy General's face in real life. And you'd be like, trank me. Come on.
Get me.
Trank me.
Now, the best story about that year. To me, and I don't think you know this one, Kid Tetris. But no. You'll know the player involved.
Okay.
So I had a girlfriend who was in Edmonton.
Yes.
And so we were doing the long distance thing.
Yeah.
And she came to town, and I went out to Edmonton. So probably over the course of the year, we probably got together about like 6 times. Okay.
Okay.
And so you know, like, as kindly as you can say it, you know. Couple of months is kind of a while,
yes.
you know.
For, yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
here
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
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 yeah, yeah.
Couple of days. A long time.
A couple of minutes. If you need to go for a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the times she comes and visits.
Yeah.
And we decide because this is how cool we are. What we're going and she was totally into this, but. We're going to go head over to old Poops' place and we're going to watch some of our wrestling videos.
Yes.
Because that's what we would do.
Yeah.
We'd show everyone these wrestling videos. So we go over there and we're watching wrestling and she's like, she is the one that's like, I want to, like, she loved them.
Yeah, she did.
But I should have married her. Like, the only person that would ever fucking, like, put up with that shit.
Yep.
But anyways, plus then she won the lottery.
I don't want to say that, but yeah. That's not a good reason he should have married her.
That's the second reason.
But anyways, she, we go over to Poops' place. And Poops, I don't drink. And Kid Tetris, you don't drink.
Nope.
And Poops is a very rare drinker.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But when he does.
You know, I like to drink. I like to tie one on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I used to. I don't anymore.
So we go over there, and Poops decides he's going to break out the vodka and orange juice. And they start drinking.
Classy. Classy.
And he,
classy
but,
guy.
But of course, like he has no concept of like how
I much, didn't have a shot glass.
How much vodka and how much orange
no.
juice to put in the mix.
I'm just eyeballing it.
So him and my girlfriend both like tie one on.
Big time.
And they both drink themselves into sickness.
Oh, God, yes.
So the next day, this Poops ends up like throwing up next to his bed.
I'm throwing up over the side of the bed.
My girlfriend is out of commission for the rest of the weekend. So that's the end of that, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you start to question your own morality at that point.
So, yeah. But yes, that was 2002.
It was a good year.
It was a good year. And then in the spring and summer, hanging out at Bar Italia with Kid Tetris's little posse of pals. Yeah. It was a good time. Getting your buddy to blow smoke in my fro and then have my hair steam.
It was like steaming so good. Yeah, so good. Those were good times.
Obviously then I moved to Ottawa and ruined that, but.
Well, you know, hey, video came back and now you're leaving again. So it wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't talk about some music. You are a music fan.
I am.
Of the ultimate degree. You are a collector. You are a concert goer. Tell us a little bit about your musical, where you've come. Because you have an interesting kind of musical taste story, actually.
Well,
throughout your life.
The trail of my music isn't... I'm not embarrassed about anything I was ever into. But it's not exactly like the greatest tale of like cool music over the course of my life. So... when I was a kid, my parents had a jukebox. And so a lot of the music that I had was whatever they had on record. And like looking back, they had this interesting mix of stuff. And of course, I just assumed, like listening to stuff, let's say like mid-80s, that everything that they had was like oldies.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No.
They had some songs where it was like, this is a pretty new song. I'm trying to think of one. Like, what would they have? They had State of Shock.
Yeah.
By the Jacksons.
Nice.
That's amazing. Or, sorry, not by the Jacksons, by Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger.
Yes.
So they had that song.
Mixed in with Elvis.
You know.
And Barry Manilow.
They had some Elvis. They had Barry Manilow. My mom had a lot of Beach Boys.
Yeah.
They had Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
Nice. So good.
You know, this
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So they had that. They had... my dad had some Johnny Cash records. He had Johnny Horton. He had the Battle of New Orleans.
Cool.
So, you know, like the, that kind of stuff. So that was kind of the stuff I would listen to. And then the next things that I listened to or whatever was playing on the radio whenever I'd drive around. And I used to be in Highland Dance and curling and eventually pipe band stuff and swimming and whatever activity I was. Mm-hmm. I'd get driven around the city every night and I'd listen to whatever's on the radio, right? So it was stuff, you know, like there were some oldies, but then like the AM stations used to play like some 80s stuff. So you get like the Phil Collins.
Yep.
You get like the Glass Tiger.
Nice.
You know, like that kind of stuff. So I eventually kind of gravitated into the first tape I owned was Slippery When Wet by Bon Jovi.
Nice.
I was in grade 3.
That's
and,
beautiful.
And asked my mom to get it for me.
So good.
So that was my first tape. And then I got into, what did I get into? Probably like the first music that I really got independently into was like Bare Naked Ladies.
Okay.
Stuff like that. Actually, no, that's not true. It was like MC Hammer.
Yes.
So I had this birthday party when I was, I think I was going to grade 6 or 7. Must have been going to grade 7. And my friends come over and they all get me tapes. So. Yes. So one tape is Stone Cold Ryman.
No.
So probably. Like awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Really
next good. One is Please Hammer Don't Hurt Him. I'm like, okay. Then another one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles soundtrack.
Oh yes.
So I'm good with that. And then the fourth one is Step by Step by New Kids on the Block. And it was so upsetting. It's like super
so
like
good.
So unhappy to have that one. So there was that. And then I remember like a few weird things with that music because like I was always, you know, like I guess like grade 6, grade 7, I was never like right in with the good music stuff. I was always behind.
Yep.
So I got into the rap stuff after everyone else had kind of gotten into it. I remember this moment where we had a Much Music dance.
Oh, yeah, the best.
And they were taking, you know, they would take requests.
Yep.
They would play the song anyways, but they would attribute the song to some kid requesting it, right? Yep. So I requested Play That Funky Music by
Vanilla Ice.
By Vanilla Ice. And when it played, I was proudly introduced as like the person that requested it, to which my friends at the time informed me that they had all moved on to Dream Warriors.
So it was
it wasn't impressive. So I was like, okay. So then I moved into that, and I was kind of, you know, and then when I forged my own path at that point, a lot of people got into grunge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nirvana and Chili Peppers and Soundgarden. And I didn't. I didn't get into that stuff until probably like 3 or 4 years later. So I got into like the geek music. So it started with Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah.
It was like Gordon was like the big album. Moxie Fruvis. They Might Be Giants.
Yes.
Spirit of the West.
Yep.
You know, like all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I didn't really gravitate back towards, like, and that was what my circle of friends listened to. So yep. I didn't feel like an outsider or anything because of that. But I didn't really gravitate back into, like, what you would consider to be, like, the mainstream rock until about 95, 96. Yep. And then I got back into, like, that was when it was, like, Live and Our Lady Peace and I, Mother Earth.
Yes.
And then to Chili Peppers.
So where does Genesis fit into all this? Because you are a huge Genesis
fan. So outside of all that arc, I always heard Phil Collins in my mom's car. So Phil Collins was the first one.
Yeah.
And I don't even if I loved it, I just knew it. Yep. So I was like, okay. And then I liked that. Like at this point, it's like Phil Collins I think is awesome. But I discovered that I started in about 1990 with Phil Collins and then subsequently found out he was in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I knew all the songs. I just didn't know there was one and the other.
Yeah.
And so then I started working my way backwards from that. So, and with Genesis particularly, the further back you go in, the better it gets.
Yes.
So, you know, you get Invisible Touch, which you just know all the songs. You get Genesis. You get Abacab. You get Duke, which is like the best one as far as I'm concerned. And then you go back from there. So then I discovered, I'm like, oh, Genesis used to have another singer. And it was Peter Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who's this Peter Gabriel? And then Steam came out. The song Steam came out. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so it was
that, by the way, is the best video ever.
Yeah. There's all one where it's a fucking train going into a tunnel, like the sexual innuendo, except the train, the head of the train morphs into his face.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
Pete's all going in.
So I was like, okay. And then the same thing with Peter Gabriel. And Peter Gabriel, big time, and not the song, but, yeah. But like with him especially, working backwards is like getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
So I became a big Peter Gabriel fan. So that was kind of the stuff on the outside of this other stuff.
Okay.
That I kind of kept to myself.
Yeah.
But that's what I really, that was my favorite and still is to this
and
day.
And at the same time, you had a shit ton of pipe band CDs.
And then in between all that, I got into pipe band. And so I had pipe band CDs and I listened like crazy to these CDs.
Oh yeah.
All the time.
All the world championships.
Driving my car. With the fucking music blaring like out the windows of like pipe band, like full pipe band, all the time, all the time. Then one day, you know, when Poops and I would have our regular like Friday nights, go out and do our thing. One day he shows up and he's like, "Let's listen to this," and he puts it in, and it's Parliament's Greatest Hits. You know,
yes,
and it was like listening to the Beatles for the first time.
What the fuck is this?
And like, and I didn't even know, like, he was into it because all of the rap artists around that time sampled Parliament, right?
And Digital Underground specifically.
Yeah. And I wasn't a fan of all of that, so I didn't even recognize the songs from samples. I just liked the music. And especially because I was like, I did a lot of jazz band stuff in school, so I was like, well, funk is kind of like jazz.
Yes.
You know, there's horns and, you know, like, it's, you know, so I got into Parliament. And then again, like, you know, a few years later is when I got into kind of the mainstream. And then it was like, for like 3 or 4 years, it was like Power 97.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. Like whatever was there.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. That's what I listened to. And then I went into this, like, probably of all the phases.
Were you a fan of C-Spot Run from out of Montreal?
I know, it's not always a party.
How about American Hi-Fi?
American Hi-Fi?
And she don't know anything.
And what was the one? Everclear?
What was the version of American Hi-Fi from overseas?
Oh, we just translated into Arabic, so that was good.
And Nintendo turned into Atari.
Because there's no Nintendo over there.
Yeah. You talked about Everclear, and I remember going to a concert once to see there was Everclear opening for.
The opener
was Nickelback. And
the opener was Nickelback.
Oh, yeah. God.
This was only weeks before I moved to Edmonton.
Okay.
And so we went to see Everclear and Nickelback. And at that time, this was before Silver Side Up, because Silver Side Up was famously released on September 11th, 2001.
Yes.
So this was about, you know, I guess 8 months before that.
Yep.
Yep.
And at that time, I didn't mind Nickelback. I still don't mind to this day.
I don't mind either of those albums. Yeah. Honestly.
Silver Side Up, I don't really mind either. You're right. No. But I mean, I don't really. I don't listen to it, but
I don't want to hear them doing the same thing every time. I'm just done with it. But
so they came out and like they were like clearly like the band that people came to see.
No one came to see Everclear,
including this kid that was sitting in the row behind us. This is at the
he was in front of us, at the edge of
and he's holding on. He's on the upper row, so he's holding on to the railing in front of him, just headbanging like
crazy
fucking motherfucker for like the whole 45.
We were just set. Like Nickelback, he's, you know, they just it was just
and then horror. Everclear came out and they were shit,
terrible,
and I mean. Shocker.
It's not shocking. No, not at all.
But then around that time, it was actually before this.
Yes.
But then it was in this era. So I, cause I, again, like I'm always kind of, you know, it's just this thing I have where it's like, I don't want to just listen to like what everyone else listens to. I want to find my own thing.
You're a little nomadic in that way.
So at that time, you know, you discover that, well, the internet can get me access to the radio from all over the world. So I start listening to a lot of BBC One and Radio One overseas. And I hook up the computer so it plugs into my stereo and I listen to music when I sleep. So I have that playing.
And back then that was a big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm listening to. Well, British music has its ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
Like popular music.
Yeah.
So one of the upsides to it is that, you know, they have, you know, there's some great rock music at the time, like kind of like the electronic thing was happening and they had some good stuff there. The downside is that there's a lot of really like shit singles.
God, yes.
Yeah,
a lot.
I was exposed to Britpop in the late 80s and early 90s living in Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some real shit bands.
And in Britain, they like things.
They really like some terrible stuff. In America, they base, I don't know if they do it anymore, but they used to base like top 100 lists on a number of different factors.
Yeah.
And one of them was sales, there was airplay, etc. Yeah. But in Britain, it was strictly that they would release a single and people would buy the singles. Yeah. And people bought singles a lot more there than they did here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on singles sales.
Yeah.
So for example, when the TV show Bob the Builder came out, all the fucking kids scooped up the Bob the Builder theme song. And so that was the number one single
in Britain
for like 11 weeks. And it became the number one single of the year because it was the most sold single.
Terrible. Mm-hmm.
But then there, like the fucking ringtone of the like,
Crazy Frog doing Axel F.
Ding, ding, like that thing. That was put on as a single and that became.
Yeah, they took
like
a ringtone and they made it into a single and it was terrible.
Yeah, that's the number one.
So you slog through all that and you find some absolute gems.
But the stuff that I like for a while listened to was like, and again, like some I don't apologize for, but like Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
You gotta apologize a little bit for that.
Yeah, I know you, doesn't work.
We talked about that a few sleepovers ago.
Yes, we did. But you know, Robbie Williams and, God, there was some other shit. True Steppers and some real dog shit. And the worst part was that in 2000 I go overseas and it's I'm an alumnus with the pipe band, so they have the pipe band go over and then they have these extra tickets that are available and they're like, if you want a discounted trip to Scotland, come over. So my mom and I decide, let's make the trip, right? So I go over, and I've been listening to BBC for, like, years. So I'm like, this is great. I'm going to go over and get my hands on all this fucking music. And, like, you know, thinking in my head, like, I'll be ahead of the curve on this stuff, right? So I go over, and I, like, gather up all this, like, a lot of shit and some good stuff and a lot of shit. And I come back, and then about 6 months later, I discover Coldplay.
Yeah.
And then I realize that Coldplay had actually, like, broken, like, when I was in Scotland. Like, that's right when it was happening, a full year before here. So me, like, where I'm like, I'm way ahead of the curve, like, missed the biggest one
of
all that stuff.
So good.
But, like, I got into all sorts of British shit.
And, yeah, big time.
And some of it was, like, the rock stuff. Like, it was, I missed, I knew the Britpop stuff, but I missed it.
Yeah.
Like, I liked Oasis. I didn't mind, like, Pulp and Blur. I didn't, I, you know, like, or, oh, God,
Radiohead?
No, the band that sang good, oh, Dodgy?
Oh, good old Dodgy, yeah.
I remember this guy I worked with in Ottawa was like, oh, I went to see Dodgy. And I was like, did they just play Good Enough for an hour and a half? But like, you know, like so shit like bad, that.
Yeah.
And then I got into like a lot of like the sappy shit. So like Travis, Coldplay, Keane, Snow Patrol, one of your...
Athlete.
One of Kid Tethford's favorites.
Yes.
Yep. Athlete.
Athlete, 13 Senses, like all that stuff.
Yep.
And then some of the other stuff like Block Party and Kasabian. Kasabian was fantastic. And Franz Ferdinand,
yeah.
And, you know, all that stuff. So that was kind of like the big stuff that I was into in my Ottawa phase. And then I came home.
Yeah.
And then...
so we're at 2006.
Yeah. And then I kind of morphed into like Kings of Leon and like that kind of stuff. Like again, before they kind of hit it big.
Yeah,
and then it moved into like this other kind of genre where I'm at now, which is like the garage rock, psychedelic rock, like you know stuff, which I've pretty much stuck to for the last like 7 or 8.
Yeah, and you've years. Been touring extensively to concerts.
Yeah, so like bands that like
nobody knows.
Like if you're out, you know, if you're actually still listening to this,
yes,
and you want to, and you think you can trust me, like. You know, the obvious stuff. Go pick up a Ty Segall record. Like,
yes. Well, yeah.
Like
everybody know, should anyway. You
know, go listen to a Michael Cronin record.
Yep.
Go listen to Night Beats. Go listen to Alala's. Go listen to White Denim. White Denim's like the best live band I've seen in like forever and ever and ever.
Yep. And now so. you are ahead of the curve now.
I guess.
Within certain circles.
I mean, either that or I just listen to things that no one listens to. Like, well, you know.
It is a little easier to be ahead of the curve now because you can just find things.
And finding music, like, I talk to people who always, like, it's weird. There was a guy that we played poker with earlier this year. And he's probably about, I guess, probably about 10 years older than I am. So in his mid-40s, and most of his friends are kind of in that age group as well. So we get in and we're talking about music, right? And it's clear that everything that they know about music is from mainstream radio.
Yes.
And so like older stuff I know, newer stuff I don't know from mainstream radio. And I just think like, I mean, if that's what you like, it's what you like. Like yeah, I don't, at this point, I you know, I'll make my Nickelback jokes, but like I'm not as big a snob about like, fuck what you listen to. Like people like what they like, right? But... it's so easy to find your own music.
Oh, like, it really is.
It really, really is. If you want to actually like take some time to find something, the internet's got that for you, whether it's old or new.
Yeah.
You know, new bands. I mean, Bandcamp is my favorite site. All you do is find people that listen to the same, like that have bought the same albums as you, and then you follow their feeds, and then it will say like, here's the stuff that these people are buying.
Yep.
And so you scan through that stuff, and like every week I could find like 5 or 6 albums. And then for old stuff, you listen to electro funk a lot.
Yep.
Classic rock, like it'll just be
find all sorts of gems.
You know, like whenever you raise a band that you like, just fucking go to YouTube, type it in, and have a listen.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to just like you don't even need streaming services or any of this stuff. Like you just stream an album while you're doing something. Right.
It's amazing. Yeah.
You know, like when Kid Tetris and I play poker. He'll just go to YouTube and they'll start streaming an album.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like.
You just have a video that's like an hour and 40 minutes long. It's just one album. You just play it.
Yeah. And you just get.
I mean, often I'll just, that's how I'll find things. Just, Discogs.
Discogs,
Where you just look at a genre and then be like, is that on YouTube? Oh my God. Yeah, it is. you know, like weird stuff. Like today, I just put up on Twitter one of my songs that I was doing, and it was like my little project that I'm doing, and I was just typed in electro funk. It's been a bit of a theme for me, and yes. It was just like, oh, here's this group called Touchdown, and they had like an album and like three singles, and this song was really good, and it was just on YouTube. Just someone had posted the US remix, because there is other versions that aren't as good, but mm-hmm. This is the US remix of one of their songs called Ease Your Mind, and it's just amazing, kind of 1982 electro funk by some obscure band, but it's so easy to find it.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to find it right here.
We've
got the headphones on. I'm going to unplug this and I'll hold it up to the mic so that Kid Tetris can hear it. Here we go. This is great. I played this today at work. It's like shit.
His hand claps.
Sounds like the intro to Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, so.
Or to Fast Food Fucking.
Yeah, 1108 Thugs.
Hold on here, I'll boost it forward a little bit so you get.
There we go.
It's got the horns. I mean, the vocals are terrible, let's be honest. They really aren't very good singers, but.
So yeah, it's like, it's not hard. If you want to do it. And again, if you don't, I get it. But I sometimes get asked, like, they're like, how do you know about all this music? And it's like, I don't know. I take some time. Mm-hmm. I take some time to search for stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And I never got away from having physical copies of music.
Yeah.
So I had a huge CD collection, which I actually just boxed up and I'm leaving at my dad's because I just can't bear to part ways with them yet.
No.
I probably will at some point. But I switched back to vinyl and... I had a vinyl phase in the kind of late 90s that centered around 80s music.
Yes, yes.
So I had a big collection at that point, which then I kind of stuck into storage. And then about 10 years later, my parents moved out of their house and were like, take your shit. And I found this old thing of records. And at the time, everyone I was listening to, where they weren't putting anything on CD. It was all on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I still want the physical copy. So I started doing the vinyl thing again. And that's...
Is he collecting a bunch of 45s and singles? And
so I'm not... You'll hear people that'll say, like, I like vinyl because there's nothing like listening to it. And it's like, that's... I don't believe that. Like, it's not the... It's a fun experience.
Yeah.
I like the big artwork. I like the big record, but it's fucking pain in the ass. Like, yeah. To be honest with you, the, you know, record players aren't reliable sometimes. And if they skip, then the thing's fucked. Like, you know, you have to cart this big ass thing around. You can't take it with you. Like, you can't just bring records and a record player to someone that doesn't have it. Right. So like, let's be honest. Like, digital is the most convenient and like the best. You can get great sound quality from it. Right.
Yes.
So. If you want that, like, yeah, like, I'm not that of that sort. I just like having the thing.
Yeah.
And I'm a collector.
You're a collector.
Yeah.
And when I start collecting, I, you know, and, you know, vinyl's one of the things I've chosen to collect. The other one is the hockey jersey thing, which is, you know, like a freaking 75 jerseys. And then the third thing is the obsession with the travel piece, where it's like, I want to hit all the states. I want to hit all the NFL stadiums. I want to hit all those things, right? So,
you took music and you kind of turned it into hosting on CQUW. And you touched on it a little bit, but how was that run for you?
It's good.
You enjoyed good. It.
You know what? I listened to a when I was in Vancouver a few months ago. I was at a music festival, and Nardwar the Human Serviette was there.
Yeah, nice.
And I didn't talk to him or anything, but I was like curious. At like, you know, one of the evenings, I was like, and like all the bands were doing shout outs to him, and I was like, you know, this is a dude that just started in kind of indie radio and made a name for himself and interviewed like a lot of famous people, right?
Yep.
Including the famous I Put Pepper on My Plate.
Yeah. Jean Chrétien.
I put it on my steak, you know?
The pepper I put on my plate.
So I looked up a TED Talks video that had Nardwar in it, and he was essentially like, I did all these things because I asked.
Yeah.
Like, I got an interview with Paul Martin because I asked Paul Martin to do an interview. And so I like that philosophy. And it's the same with the radio thing. Like, you know, you're not going to walk into CGOB and get a gig, right?
Not anymore anyway.
No, Jesus.
No. Oof, not this week.
Yeah. Hi-oh!
But if you wanted to go to, but with CKUW, I mean, I had an in. I was asked to take over a co-hosting show.
What was your in?
Just to people that I knew. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was asked to take in, you know, to co-host, a show. And, so I was able to walk on and I felt weird about it. I was like, so I'm just on the air now? Like, yeah. I'm just on the air.
And well, you were an alumni, right? You're an alumni. You're an alumni.
I was, but, alumnus, like, more, right? Yeah. But it was just like, I got trained, and then it was just like, you now have a radio show where there are people that are still waiting, like, for
yep.
shows. And
yeah,
I was
well,
like,
there you
okay.
go.
So I just did it, but I just realized at that point, it's just like, you just do it. Like, you just.
Just go in.
And it was
it.
Fun. Like, I mean, I know, like, you know, I'm sure, you know, there's no, there, like, it's not that there's no one listening, but, you know, it's not a lot. But it's just a kind of a fun. It's a fun well, thing to do, right?
Compared to a lot of radio stations in this city, you probably had a sizable audience.
Yeah, yeah.
God,
you know, yeah, not better than eighth.
No, no, not better but, than eighth. No, but, if you're eighth in the city, you're feeling pretty good.
Maybe,
maybe.
I mean, if you surveyed everyone,
yes, you'd have to survey
make
the
sure.
City.
But I don't know. I was fun. That, you know, when it came up, the Toronto thing came up. It was like okay. The three things where it was like, shit, you know?
Yep.
You know, because, you know, I love Winnipeg, but, like, I'm not going to miss a city. I'll
nope.
be honest.
Nope.
Like, I'm not going to miss a city. I'm going to see the Jets out there.
How dare you?
I know.
How dare you?
You know? Like, again, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back probably way too many times, right?
Yes.
So, I'm not going to miss it. It was like, okay, Pass. So, you know, I'm going to miss my family, particularly.
Shit, you're
my
stepping
parents.
Over my last question. Yeah. I was going to do the big sappy intro to make all the people in Winnipeg happy. What do you miss? So now you can go.
And then I'm going to miss my pals.
Oh.
And then the third thing is I'm going to miss the radio and the podcast thing. And that was the one where it's like, that's the one where it's like, how am I going to get this back? Because yeah. everything else, I mean, come on, you guys won't turn your backs on me again. The moment I get there, you'll be like, we started hanging out at Bartelli again.
See ya.
Just bragging to me and putting it on Periscope. So I have to be sad to watch. But I was like, but the podcast and the radio piece, I was like, how the hell am I going to get into this in Toronto? How am I going to figure it out? Right.
Yep.
So anyways, there's a startup station with Ryerson University. It's online only right now. They have an AM. They have an AM slot, which is like, I like the idea just because like AM radio is like to me it's like such cheesy like 70s
yep.
rock and trying to find like obscure of that is something that I'd be interested in doing.
Yep.
But it sounds like as a startup they're definitely looking for some help.
Nice.
So I might have an in. And otherwise with the podcast piece I'm going to try to stay on with SB Nation in some capacity.
Yep.
The goal is to try to interview other hockey bloggers from other teams that are in the midst of either about to play the Jets or have played the Jets or in some sort of rivalry with the Jets. So I can get the chirping.
You'll be the correspondent.
I'll be the
Ontario
one that
correspondent.
That will talk to these people and try to, but try to make it Winnipeg centric.
Yep.
And then in terms of what I'll do in Toronto otherwise, I have no idea. We'll try to do the sleepover via Skype.
Yes.
Beyond the handle, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but, good. But yeah, I'll keep it up. I'll keep
nice.
It
nice. See, you should have just moved to Regina where you could be the big fish.
I could.
You had to go to Toronto, didn't you?
I know. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say it because, and again, like now I'll just keep pissing Winnipeg people off because I've just said I won't miss it. But, you know, we have this big Winnipeg-Regina rivalry, which is like, it's funny. Like when I lived out east, people out there are just like, it's the same. Like they see Winnipeg and Regina and Saskatoon as all the same.
Yeah.
They know, they all know, like, Winnipeg's mm-hmm. the biggest one.
Yeah.
But they're just like, it's just more Regina. Like, you know, they have an
NHL. They probably think that we're really close together, too.
And now we have an NHL team. So that's one thing that differentiates. But from 2003 to 2006, what really separated
nothing.
Winnipeg from Regina
Not a whole
and Saskatoon?
Lot.
Like, what really did?
The Manitoba Moose.
We had an AHL team, they had WHL.
Yeah.
You know, so that was it. So, I mean, you yeah. know, we'll But anyways, I love you, Winnipeg.
Oh, there you go. See, that's a good way to end it. I think Winnipeg. I one thing that I thought about, and you are just like all those great Winnipeggers. You know,
like
Neil
Dallas.
Young, and Nia Vardalos, and Chris Jericho, and any like, you know, professional athlete that, you know, just doesn't want to live here. You have decided to move on, but we wish you all the best, and we'll hope to hear you on the podcast airwaves soon enough.
Hey, we'll try it. Thanks for doing this with me, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
You guys are... You know,
don't forget, everybody.
I'll cry when I get off the air.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget, everybody.
Come on, I want you to cry right now.
You will be able to catch Slip as we try to continue the mezzanine sleepover. So you get to hear his sexy voice, hopefully, for a few more times. Hopefully it works out. But until then, we will see you on the other side. And good night, everybody.
All right, gang, there you have it. A lengthy interview with me, your friend, Slip. Hosted by Poops McKenzie. And, of course, we were joined by our mutual pal, Kid Tetris. And that was a really good time. And so was hosting this show and meeting many, many, many different people. I did 25 episodes, each with a different person. A couple who I had already known, but many who I met for the first time in doing the episode. Thank you so much to everybody who has participated on the show as a guest, and who has bravely come to my Winnipeg condo, which is for sale right now, by the way. Get in contact with me if you want to find a really nice buy in Osborne Village. And to everybody that's listened and provided feedback, and just taking the time to hear me as well as all of the guests of the show, I truly appreciate it. I hope that at some point this show will continue in some incarnation. Stay tuned. Go to @BeyondTheHandle, and I will keep you posted over there on Twitter. In the meantime, go to Garbage Hill, find some other podcasts, listen to the Mezzanine Sleepover, and keep in touch with me, because I am @Slip over on Twitter, and this has been Beyond the Handle. We're going to end the show with Different Skeletons. Same song as we used in episode 1 called Fastidious. They are from my new hometown, Toronto, Ontario. Enjoy. Have a great week.